first meeting of the Zoning and Annexation Committee.
Yeah, we are.
We have present Mark Lukey, Sandy Husman, Mary Westfall, Mike Brown, Katie Campolini, Doug Hainem, and our Law Director, Jim Moan, and the Fourth Estate is here. So, Jim, do you know what the, there's a memo here.
Yes.
You want to give us some background on this? Because this is a change.
Yes, this is a change. We believe that after the last council meeting or committee of the whole, whichever addressed this last, we were, the city administration was charged with trying to come back with our proposed legislative changes in light of the discussions that were, that we heard from council members. Kevin Aller, Bob Overly, and I met. We discussed this then at staff, and this is a, this contains a list of either reaffirmations or changes to the recreational vehicle portion of our code, which we would be prepared to suggest be implemented. We think that we've covered all the items that were discussed, and we can go through and respond to them, but it's a...
How is this different from what we looked at?
Okay. Well, it's starting off, we do not, this is not an outright ban. We are banning, we propose that these types of recreational vehicles be stored only in rear yards. No side yard, no front yard storage. So that's either a clarification from what we had before, or that's the position that the administration wishes to take. Running down the list, number three, we've added 24 hours to the time to load and unload. I don't think that's a change from what was proposed before. We have inserted a 5-foot setback from any lot line. In some of our previous proposals, it had been 3. 5 is no change. 6 is no change. 7 is a reaffirmation that recreational vehicles must be on a hard surface, crushed stone, concrete, or asphalt. Any of those would be acceptable. We've inserted a requirement that tarps over recreational vehicles are not acceptable. If they're part of the original design, that's fine, but there are lots of folks that just have tarps tossed on top of things, and we want to be clear on that. One of the number 9 is probably the one that we talked about the most. We're requesting or suggesting that no recreational vehicle be visible from an adjoining street. Screening is permissible to accomplish this requirement. That would take away, we feel, some of the concerns the folks have about the deteriorating neighborhood to have all these vehicles visible. So we are just say that they cannot be visible. Screening is permissible to accomplish it. Number 10, recreational vehicles on corner lots should be at least 60 feet from both the front line and the side yard line nearest the street. That parallels yard setbacks that we have for construction of homes on front lot lines, and that pushes recreational vehicles further off of the road. Those were our recommendations. We'd be happy to discuss it. We talked about seasonality, couldn't come to any conclusion on that. We thought that that probably was not really going to fly, and we did discuss the idea of some other suggestions that came up, and we were really concerned about how you enforce permitting. So we did not address permitting in this permitting for exceptions because of the subjective nature of it. Kevin Aller did not want to have that become something that their department would have to address. So that's what we came back with on our recommendations.
Just off the top, I have, like, the two things that I thought were the best things are now gone. The 20-foot limit, I mean, that lets you keep something that you've been able to keep in your yard for the last 20 years. So people that have had it, but it takes away the huge monster trailer. And I thought that the permit idea was a really good idea. I mean, so that if the zoning inspector or whoever has to go see it can't, you know, see that it's definitely a problem, but it's not addressed. I mean, that takes care of those huge monster things. The special exception, the guy that has a good place to put it, the people in Silvertown that have a huge yard, they could, I mean, it just seems like there are exceptions that are okay.
You know, let me comment on that, because then you can respond to both sides of the argument.
Sure.
You know, I think both of the issues that you like, in my view, have some downsides to them. I think that we really have an enforcement problem within the permitting business. You know, if God had wanted permitted, he would have given us the 10 guidelines rather than the 10 commandments, right? And I think that that just is tough to enforce. And I respect Mr. Allard's position on that, because he's the one that's going to have to enforce it. I think the size limitation, I was happy to see that gone, because I think that that's a stake in the ground that we'll never be able to agree on where it's supposed to go. And I don't know that we have a significant problem with huge recreational vehicles in this community. You know, they are what they are. They are what people afford. And so I was happy to see that, because I think we could have debated another year if we were to say 19 feet versus 22 feet. You know? So just a different point of view. Jimmy's going to react both, but.
That's part of the reason. One way to address that was to shrink the, to require 5 feet instead of 3 feet off of property lines to take it further away. That was one of the bases to look at size. It has to fit in there. It's got to be, but those are this is our recommendation anyway.
I make a comment on the permit. I agree with Mark. I think anytime you leave it open to the discretion of an individual, those discretions sometimes will be not handled properly. So I think you need to leave the permit out of it and stick straightly, you know, these are the zoning requirements, and if you violate them, you have to move it. And no discretion at all. Whenever there's discretion in a zoning any kind of a regulation, it can be broken.
I do have a question, Jim, about how this applies to existing RVs. Okay, in two particular instances,
right?
We're all of a sudden saying to somebody who has legally stored a recreational vehicle 3 feet off the lot line on a paved surface,
right,
that is not an inexpensive proposition in some cases, that we're changing it to 5, and also saying that the tarp that you bought, brand new tarp that you bought 2 years ago on your boat, is now no longer acceptable. How do we think about that?
Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with that, particularly the tarp. Yeah. I mean, the tarps that are driving around town looking at the tarps, the tarps that have been bought and that are covering boats,
yeah,
are
$20.
They're not appropriate. The kind of thing that the type of cover that they're talking about here is a different.
Them that they got to go out and get a cover.
Right.
Right.
If they're going to store it with a cover.
If we do that, I'd like to see some sort of time phase in.
One of the, to try to address the issue is that it's very hard to try to make one thing fit all. You know, we talked about, you know, the person that's 3 foot, the concrete, so on and so forth. This is a, you know, a complaint-driven enforcement, and we, you know, the complaints that we have been receiving, to my understanding, have been those that are more of a problem than the type you're talking about. And you know, one could argue or raise the claim of, you know, being grandfathered in. I think that might work for a while. I don't know how long that would last, because obviously this is a change for those that already have the paved surface right there. One would expect, I just don't know of any with paved surfaces that are 3 feet or so off that we've gotten any complaints about. We just have to handle those. You talk about enforcement and discretion, and that's an art form that hopefully we can do a good job on.
Let's talk about enforcement for a minute.
Yep.
Didn't we adopt some administrative penalties under our zoning code?
Yes.
Where are those?
Well, those are our, you're talking about the administrative code enforcements where we issue a fine?
Yeah.
Yep, they're in the code.
Okay, I'm looking at our building planning and zoning code. Because I got to tell you, I was distressed listening to people on Ball 4 last night.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I don't want to turn anybody into a criminal, but I would love to have a judgment. I would love the city to have a judgment against that house, against that property, so that we would have some serious leverage to address the issue. And in fact, I would like, as a routine matter, when we find building code violations, that we immediately, within, you know, give people 10 days to fix them, and if they don't fix them, immediately levy an administrative fine and levy a lien on those properties. That's the way we get compliance with our code. I mean, it's not, I don't want to turn anybody into a criminal, but by the same token, you know, I feel for those people, and we have done nothing to help them. I mean, I sat here and listened to that, and there's nothing I can do as a councilman to help them, because I've got a good code. Everything that they're talking about is absolutely right. Okay, this is for whatever reason, okay, and there are all kinds of reasons why bad things happen, and I get it. And they're all, and I certainly want to help people who are in trouble, but by the same token, we have no leverage at all, other than right now with this situation. And now we're going to have the same issue with RVs and boats. Okay, we're going to have people that are going to violate these rules, and we are so tentative in enforcing our code because the only thing we ever think about are these draconian penalties. And I would really love to see a change in our enforcement policy such that we could focus on administratively leveling civil fines that we could immediately turn into liens, okay, that mean that we have leverage to get those things addressed, as opposed to what we have now, which is, you know, Bob goes out, and I know he tries hard, I know he talks to people, I know he's trying to work the system, and I want him to continue to work the system. But behind that system, I want the biggest club I've got, and there are civil remedies that we could use that would give us real incentive so that when Bob shows up and talks to somebody nicely, they have a reason to comply.
I agree, we have non-criminal enforcement tools that could be applied in that situation. I agree, that distressed me too. However, I will say, on this particular case, from what I hear anecdotally, I've not been involved in the process, but administrative fines or levies for someone who hasn't paid their property tax in 4 years, we take a secondary position behind the property taxes and the mortgage. This is one of those real tough ones.
Perfect. And then we can file our own foreclosure. We then control the timing, not the auditor. Okay, we then control the enforcement. Sure, there's somebody ahead of us, but we're going forward, and you can show up and you can deal with it and you can address it,
mm-hmm.
or not. We cede our power, we cede our control over our city to third parties when we don't have that lien on that enforcement lien that gives us the power to and us the discretion on how we proceed with a particular property.
Let me ask a question on behalf of the rest of us who are not attorneys.
Right.
Okay. And this is not having to do with recreational equipment, but it does have to do with the discussion last night.
Right.
My recollection on the only similar matter that we've had before us in the time that I've been on council is the street on Main Street.
Correct.
Main Street, right. And in that case, that owner ultimately was hauled into court.
Correct.
There were,
yeah.
He did something that created a series of appearances before Judge Rainey.
Correct.
And engagements with the prosecutor's office. To the point where, at the end, he was going to go to jail.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Correct.
Now, how is that situation different than what we're seeing over in Belleville? Is there any difference?
Well, we certainly didn't enforce it. We're not enforcing it the same way. We exercise the municipal court in our criminal portion of our code to get that desired result. We have not done that in this case.
What prompted us to pull that trigger and not here?
I know what it was. That there's nobody living in that house. There's emotion involved here because there's a person
beings,
living
yeah.
there with children. It's yeah.
Yeah,
because
I think
here's a single divorced mother with neglected children and versus a house that had nobody living in it except for the guy next door that owned the house who was just belligerent. I mean, who cared if that house was bulldozed? There was nobody living there. Nobody had lived there in years. He was just, you know.
Okay, but the mechanism exists, right?
The mechanism exists, but that's our problem.
So, and I appreciate what that's saying about a civil approach. That's fine. But I think what ultimately got our guy on Main Street to do something was that he was in a foot jail, right?
I think that's accurate.
And it took 3 years, okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but that, it was coming out of that we changed our code, and I'm trying to find that provision. It's not in the general provision. I thought we added.
I just don't want to dig for it right now.
Yeah, we added administrative penalties mm-hmm. because you're absolutely right. When we're dealing with that house on Main Street, the only option we had were the administration and enforcement, the penalty provisions in 1103, I think was all there. And I was looking last night, and I couldn't find.
I'll send it to you. I just
administrative rules, but mm-hmm. what we. And the reason I wanted to look at it was to see if we need to amend it.
Okay.
Because here's the deal. Okay. There. I don't want to turn anybody into a criminal under this circumstance. But by the same token, you know, there are other ways. Remember, we wanted to shorten the process, and I thought we did. We adopted an administrative penalty process where we would notify them and then immediately levy a penalty,
right.
administrative penalty. And that was enforceable by
lien,
which means, okay, now you owe the city of Sylvania $1,000 for being in violation of the building code. Okay, you don't pay it, so we then record an actual lien on the property. If you sell the property, we get our penalty.
Yeah.
Okay. If or alternatively. If we choose, we don't have to go to court with Judge Ramey to make somebody a criminal. We just foreclose on our lien. That's a civil action that we can do, that the administration can do to enforce the code.
So at that point, what happens to the family? They have to go away?
No, they then have, in the lien setting, what they would do is they have to respond to the lien foreclosure. Which means they either have to pay the fine, or the property gets sold. Now, what that means is when you file that lien foreclosure action, you are in a very powerful position to talk to somebody about coming into compliance with your code, to do away with the lawsuit. That's what, and the threat of that power gives you the power to stop people from just thumbing your nose at you. And that's exactly what we had on Main Street was the thumb your nose at us. And it went on and on. And that's why we amended the code. And it's a, it doesn't do away with our ability to be generous, to be concerned about a specific situation, but it gives us the power to be the ones that are making the decisions about how we deal with these situations.
Yeah, right.
And the neighbors are, and our neighbors, you know, when they look at the code and they look at this house, okay, this house hasn't been in compliance with our code probably since the day they moved in. The day they moved in, that house was out of compliance with the code. If we had enforced against the prior owner, okay, if we had followed this process on the prior owner, before the house was sold, it would have either had to been brought up to code, or penalties would have had to been paid. And in most likelihood, what would have happened is the house would have never been sold, okay? It would have gone vacant, and then we would have had the power to deal with it. Okay, we could do with the owner who let the house get in disrepair in the first place. And is that harsh? I don't think it's harsh if we're going to enact building code. It's what's harsh is what we've now done to this to these neighbors. Okay. That's harsh.
Yeah, Doug, you know, I agree with you from the standpoint that I think the neighbors have a very justifiable position. I think they have figured out, like the neighbors on Main Street and neighbors in other areas, that perhaps the only way to get some action out of our city sometimes is to bring it to the attention of the elected officials and plant themselves in front of us two or three or four meetings in a row, which is wrong. They shouldn't have to resort to that. I think, though, what we're doing is giving this committee one more thing to do. I would really like to have Mr. Mullen look at what, if any, administrative procedures were put in place after Main Street and have a little more discussion about what our position needs to be moving forward. Maybe the administration just needs to have a little bit of reinforcement from council about how we'd like to see these matters addressed. So would that be appropriate to put on the committee's agenda in relatively near term?
It's on our agenda.
Yeah,
right
yeah. I think what you're saying is correct. I think that our code has adequate capabilities of working on this issue. It's an enforcement issue on the administration to find the best way to get compliance for this particular case. And I don't know the circumstances of this particular one. The mayor asked me to get up to speed on what happens with that, what's happened with that foreclosure action. There's a number of items that we can look at. Civil penalties is an option. I'm not sure in this particular case that the desired result would get there. So I may disagree with Doug on this particular fact situation, but we need to provide a statement back to you folks as to what enforcement is really gonna get it done.
Yeah,
and we've not done that.
In the case of this property, but in the case of future situations.
I agree.
You know, I think I'm agreeing with you on one point, that for a vast majority of citizens, mm-hmm. Civil action and the penalties related to civil action will work. I think there are people that we've seen surface in the economy over the last 5 years. Rich people, poor people, single people, married people, doesn't matter, who just don't respond to civil penalties, right? We've seen countless examples in the economy over the last couple of years of people who are thrown into foreclosure. They know they've got a year or two before the bank takes over. They live in the property until they can, and they disappear.
Yep.
You know, put the key under the mat and go away. Mm-hmm. And they don't really care about civil penalties. I would therefore say that those people do respond to criminal penalties. Mm-hmm. And like Mr. Crandall, who owned the home on Main Street, the only thing that got him to move was the fact that, and I really do believe it was going to happen, that mm-hmm. Judge Ramey and Ms. Wagner were going to put him in jail.
Yep.
So when you address it, and that's by way of saying when you address it, let's make sure that you also address what the criminal options are to the city.
Okay.
So can we translate that conversation back to this boat and RV? Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah.
Ultimately,
that's exactly what we're talking about. Okay, and because the Balfour case is extreme, but what we're going to have, what we have now, when you drive around, you know, one of the things, you know, every time I drive around, I told the mayor, I don't spend enough time outside of driving to work and home. I mean, I'm driving around the city the last couple weeks looking at these RVs. There's a lot of them, and they are all over the map. I mean, some of them are, I mean, there are some, you know, like just like you'd expect, great people in Sylvania who have, you know, built wonderful places to store their RVs where they're not bothering anybody. They look great. And then you got big boats with big blue tarps on, you know, that are tilted at an angle, falling off a you know, blocks. And
the tarps are held down by milk jugs.
Yeah, and you just want to scratch your head, and you think, if that was next door to me, it would drive me nuts. So that guy, the guy with the milk jugs and the blue tarp, okay, we're going to enact this code. We're going to give him, we're going to give him 30 days or 8 months or 2 years to comply, and he's not. And because if he cared at all about his neighbors, he would have taken care of it already. And then what are we going to do? Well, I want to find him administratively. I don't want to go to Judge Ramey. I don't want to turn him into a criminal. I want to say, hey, you're in violation of our code. Fix it, or we're going to fine you. And when he doesn't fix it, then we fine him. And then we control the enforcement procedure, because that's civil. We don't have to go to a court and ask for, you know, will you fine him? We can file the case and the lien procedures, you know, we enforce the lien and off we go.
And I will tell you, I've not bird dogged the civil enforcement, but I do know that from the time that it was enacted, there are cases where we did that. Sent it out, got compliance, got some fine money in, and it worked. We've never had one that went to an appeal. I think in recent times, we've probably not moved forward on that aggressively. Our zoning department has been in some transition with some changes and so on, and that needs to be re-ramped up. But we've done it. I think we've had some good results from it. But we've never even had one that went to a hearing, which required, more enforcement from the law department. So I think that we could do it. I just don't know why we haven't done it more.
I agree with Doug. I felt completely helpless last night when those people were up here talking, because we had not done our job. And it's out of control, and I was embarrassed. It's one of the first times I've been embarrassed on city council in 6 years, and I was embarrassed last night, and I felt helpless, and we need to do something to enforce it.
Going back to the recreational legal piece, another question, and this relates to another group of folks we'll take here, and those are the residents from the Hideaway neighborhood, right? Mm-hmm. The house is on a corner, has a very deep lot, and apparently has a recreational vehicle. How do these requirements, not necessarily...
Why would you pull that one? That's too bad. It's a fair question.
I don't want to talk about enforcement for a minute, but it would seem to me that based on this set of guidelines, that particular problem slipped through cracks, or wouldn't.
The cracks are with crushed stone and a hard surface, perhaps. It would have to be 5 feet off of the rear yard line. It would have to be a side yard. It's a side yard. It would have to be 60.
It's in a backyard.
It's visible from the street.
Okay.
It would have to be screened from the street. It would probably not offer much protection to that particular man's property, because we're not requiring under this provision to screen it from any view. We took a, you know, this proposal is screened from the street view.
Okay.
So 5 feet off, I don't know if it's probably 5 feet off, but I don't know that. Probably is, or close. It would have to, in this situation, it would have to be on a hard surface.
Okay, that doesn't.
And it would have to be screened from whatever the side street would be. That's the stepped up.
Okay.
Top, yeah.
So a question, would it be appropriate to address the issue? And I, again, I'm very sympathetic to the neighbors that were here from Hideaway and the neighbors in that particular room. To extend the reference to screening to not just be screening from the street, but screening from adjacent neighbors.
Well, doesn't this no recreational vehicle shall be visible from an adjoining street screening is permissible to accomplish this requirement, but wouldn't that?
Adjoining street, right. We're not talking about a backyard where the person's looking out
Of their house
and sees the recreational vehicle and the neighbor right behind them. This does not address that.
Right. You know, and again, I'm sympathetic because, you know, I, like the mayor, I live on Poland Park, and if Gary Mandrakowski someday decides he wants to put a work trailer behind my property, I wouldn't want that. And that's kind of the equivalent of what you have, right? So do we want to broaden the language to include screening from adjacent neighbors?
That's something for council to discuss.
So now you're gonna.
Now you're screened all the way around it.
Screened all the way around it.
That's the.
Which means you basically need to build a structure, yeah.
What is appropriate screening?
Visibility. And that's where the discretion will come in. What's the problem is, of course, is we have a 6-foot-high fence situation. When you've got a 7-foot-high motor home, is the extra foot, does that have to be screened? There is some discretion that's going to have to be applicable here, but we talked about screening all the way around, and this is our recommendation is from the street view, because that's what we heard from most of the people, that doesn't address that particular person's situation other than hard surface and 5 feet off.
Yeah, I don't think they care about hard surface or 5 feet. I think they care about the visual clutter.
Yeah.
But that particular thing.
He also had concerns about the condition of the vehicle and whether it was operable, which are some of the other minor issues that we also have in there. Kept in good repair.
They're not minor. They're important issues.
Yes. I mean,
they're in there. They're
minor changes from what we've had before.
Yeah, the other problem with this proposal is that there are some great side yard storage facilities. There's one on Ball 4. I think it is on Ball 4, further up the street, the end that we're going to pave now. Beautiful home, really nice home with a landscaped parking facility for their on the side of the house for the RV. You know, and it's covered on three sides. You can see it from the street. It's covered from, but there are bushes and trees on the back and on the side. Mm-hmm. Okay, and that's illegal here. And I know that the administration doesn't want to do permits, but what if we had council do the permits?
What if we have planning commission do the permits?
Well, or council.
Well, you know, we're saying permit, but I wonder if we're talking about an appeals process that is perhaps a council process. Doug, what you're suggesting is that we write the code, write the regulation to basically state that it's backyard storage.
Right.
Exception will be made pending an appeal process by the resident to someone. I raised that question with Jim before we got started, and I understand Mr. Allen's point, but that's an extreme exception to side yard storage, I think. You know, we're not going to get 100 people coming here and want to store RVs in the side yard. And I think.
Just driving around, I can think of 4 or 5 really okay. People who've invested significant money in.
But see, that's 4 or 5. It's 100.
That's right.
Okay, so
not 100. If Bob were here, he might be able to tell you about 100.
Well, I think if we have also some sort of a reasonable grandfather period,
yeah,
that would, you know,
Okay, I'd like to say a few words. One thing is the Planning Commission sent back to us one point that permanent storage of unmaintained or unusable boats or RVs not be allowed. And I think we need to get that in here somehow. I'm suggesting maybe it could be a second sentence under number one.
Yeah.
Where we would say permanent storage of unmaintained or unusable recreation vehicles, boats, trailers, et cetera, is not allowed. I think that addresses something that isn't really, it says good repair.
Yeah, I think I agree.
Unusable, unmaintained. I like that verbiage.
Okay.
The other thing is, as far as grandfathering in, my thought is on that we do something like a three-month, what is it, moratorium, or that they, okay, you've got till the end of summer to figure out something different for your situation. Not that we say 3 months from the date that we get a complaint from a citizen, but 3 months from when we pass this ordinance or put it in our zoning code, so that we have a start date. We would have to publicize it, but we need to get it out there so people can start making plans for when we are going to enact the code. I think we need to be sure that we have a definition for what a rear yard is and have that. I did not look definition.
We have a definition for it.
That says exactly mm-hmm. what it is, so the citizens know that. And also, what about the storage of, in number three, it says only one recreational vehicle, but could you leave your boat, let's say you go put your boat in the water and you bring the trailer back and you set the trailer in the yard.
That's the one.
Is that allowable?
Mm-hmm. That's one.
Okay. Do we want that to be allowable? So you put your boat in the water for what, 4 months, and you leave the trailer in the backyard?
You can leave the boat in the trailer in the backyard all the time if you want.
The rear yard.
Rear yard, okay. Yeah.
But we... Okay, well, think on that.
Okay.
And then the other point is, I know we've heard from a citizen, and I know I'll hear from her again as to asking me what we've done about this, but there's a boat that's stored in a rear yard. These are small lots, so right outside her house, this boat is stored, and the gentleman works on it, starts the engine, which isn't working that good, so there's fumes, and... can we say that you can't do mechanical work in your yard? Starting engines, you know, whenever you choose. And
we could, but I wouldn't want to do that.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just saying.
You can't operate. You can't work on other people's vehicles. We've got prohibitions for that type of thing. Or for boats, if you can't. I used to represent a fella in another location, not in the city, that years ago that operated. As he said, he wrenches, and he wrenched in his garage until he couldn't. You're not allowed to do that. But I don't know where you say you, what rights do you have to be able to do things in your on your property. There are other. I have to think about that. I don't know. Can you start your own lawnmower in the backyard? Where do you?
Can you change your brakes in your driveway? Because my son did that this weekend.
Yeah. Can you change it? Yeah. I don't.
I'm just saying that boat's in the rear yard.
Yeah.
So that's that's legal.
Yeah.
So
we're not all going to live in little glass.
I'm sorry.
Bubbles. We're not going to live in glass bubbles. And people are going to. People are going to do things in their backyards. They're going to start motors. They're going to grill out. They're going to have, now we have fire pits. We're allowed to have fire pits now. people are going to do things. It's life. Get over it. I'll tell her that. You want me to call her?
So if, what if we add screening on all, not just from the street, but from everywhere, so that it's screened, so you can't see it from your neighbor's house, you can't see it from the street?
I don't think that's practical.
Well, some people have already done it. I mean,
yeah, but it's not, it's generally, it's not always practical, it's not always necessary.
Well, then you get to explain that to the folks from...
Well, I know, but, look, why don't we ban them? Let's just ban them, okay? I don't have a recreational vehicle, okay? You know, but none of my, and you can't have them in my neighborhood, okay? So let's just ban them everywhere, that's what we can do. I mean, the problem with this is whatever we do here, okay, we're not gonna address every situation, okay? So what we're trying to come up with is something that is generally okay. When you start talking about screening everything, you gotta build a garage or a pen for these things. And if that's what you want, that's a big deviation from what we've got and from what we've ever had. I mean, I think a lot of this, and I know you don't like the size issue, big part of this is size. You know, little boats, little things, those are considerably less trouble because they're less visual clutter, they take up less space. You know, I kind of like the 20-foot length, and I know that was going to antagonize people too. And that's why I wanted to try, and that's why I like the 20-foot limit not an appeal, not a variance, but a permit that required an affirmative approval for a period of time for somebody to do something larger than the base.
How long would that be? How long would the permit be valid for?
3 years. A year? I'd go with a year. I could do a year. It's an enforcement thing, so that if people don't, they're going to come in and they're going to say, we're going to have this nice side yard, like this side yard on Balfour that I'm talking about, okay? And it looks great. And then when the trees go away, or when the trees die, or when the fence falls over, you know, whatever, we have that screened in area over on Maple. You know, when that fence gets in disrepair, we can pull the permit.
Well, yeah, but that's not a year, it's a 3 year.
Okay, yeah. 3 years is okay.
At 6 months when your process is to contact all the adjoining neighbors, okay?
Yep.
And the adjoining neighbor then would have to come in and affirmatively object, which is one of the things we don't want to have happen. Or what happens if they say yes, but they really don't mean yes? And what happens when 6 months later they move and new people come and say, we don't like it?
Well, at the end of 3 years, they have to try again.
Right. You know, Doug, these are that slipped by quickly, and I want to make sure I heard it right, because if you said it, I agree with it. Which is the notion of a 20-foot limit on recreational vehicles, but it's appealable.
Yeah, or permittable.
Yeah, okay, so if we're saying, and I think this might be a grand bargain here, but if we're saying that it's a 20-foot limit, and we're saying it's backyards only, but that's appealable to somebody as to the length and as to the side yard. Okay, those two are the variables here. It's appealable to whatever body we choose for a period of for a permit that's issued for 3 years, then renewable or reviewable. I like that. I mean, it puts some burden on somebody, but I like that because it is flexible enough to accommodate a responsible person who comes in with a plan, even though that plan may be written in the back of a placemat or something, to show how it's going to look and how he or she's going to do it. I think that makes sense. And our city should be sophisticated enough to be able to accommodate that kind of appeal or that kind of request.
Who would you, a side yard appeal, who has the right to comment, or what type of input do you get? In that situation, it'd have to be screened from the street, right? Side yard appeal?
Yes.
Screened from the street?
Yeah, that's one of the criteria.
Okay.
Probably come up
hard surface?
Sure.
Talk about a BZA variance.
There you go.
BZA, you know, generally the rules are, you know, it's for something that's beyond the owner's control.
I thought we changed it.
Well, we've got some legal language to provide some degree of flexibility, a greater degree of flexibility.
No, I'm looking at this code online. Is this not up to date? Our online code?
I'm not the, what's the person? I'm not the one that's the custodian of our.
Because this was the issue that we had with Gary Summer about.
Right.
A variance from terms of the zoning ordinance shall not be granted by the board unless the required public hearing is held and unless and until all of the following findings are made. And I thought we changed.
We did change that. That's been changed.
Okay. And this shows it as the 2012 replacement.
We changed it.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Because we said those are.
There's the catch-all phrase. It's the catch-all phrase that provides the flexibility.
Yeah.
Something. What's at the bottom of it?
Well, okay.
Anyway.
Well, in the interest of time, because some of us have to move on here, I'd like to at least get a vote on the floor. Okay. I don't think we're going to solve this today, but I think if we could give the administration a little bit of direction, they could come back with something that is fairly close to maybe what some of the problems of the race. I liked what Jim presented to us initially. I had a few reservations, and basically you taught me how to have it. Uh-huh. Because, you know, I was concerned about the 5 foot. I think I feel fine about the 5 foot. I was concerned about the tarp material. I think I feel fine about the tarp material. I think if we can embrace what Doug suggested, which is that we keep it the way it is, but provide two opportunities for appeal and permitting, one being the size, and I guess I would include putting size in there.
Anything in excess of 20 feet is not permitted.
But then provision number 12.
Unless permitted.
It says appeals are permitted for both size and side yard location with proper provisions based on appeal to the group or zoning appeals, zoning annexation committee, whatever it may be, city council. I think that gives us a reasonable, flexible set of guidelines.
Okay.
The one piece that I want to have some discussion about, though, is grandfather. Because I have a very different view of grandfather than people want to understand.
Okay.
But I want to look at.
Yeah.
I think if you've got.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Grandfather for how long?
Well, okay, here's what I was going to say. Look, if this is a complaint-driven deal, what I heard Sandy saying is something that I'm detesting right now in my own home, which that somebody somewhere, some egghead somewhere, decided that a regular light bulb is right? So now we're having to buy these goofy twirly light bulbs. I don't have any problem with twirly light bulbs, and I'm being forced to make a change, right? Now, if I can still buy them, I'm going to have them forever, and enforcement will be limited, right? Because people won't come into my house. But I don't want to create a situation where everybody has 3 months to change up what they're doing. What I would prefer from a grandfathering standpoint is that if there's a complaint and if a citizen is found to be in violation, we give that citizen a period of time, 6 months maybe, to make the change, 3 months to make the change. I really don't want to create a situation where we're forcing a wholesale relocation of recreational vehicles and people. I just think that's really intrusive, and I wouldn't support that.
6 months from the complaint or 6 months from the change?
From the finding. But make it three. I mean, I think six is reasonable, because you know what? We think it's neat that, you know, it only costs $100 to go out and buy a new tarp. But for some people, $100 is hard to come by, right? And so I think we just have to be sensitive to the realities of many of our citizens' lives right now. But I'm 3 months, 6 months. But only if there's a complaint and only if we find them in violation. And only if they've already had this in place for
right.
20 years.
My concern is that we're going to end up with a lot of people looking at this issue and wanting to make an appeal or ask for a special variance. And I still wonder if there's not some way to create some kind of legislation that allows us to incorporate or to accommodate the larger vehicles if they meet these requirements. They've got the concrete, they're enclosed or whatever. And if they don't have those things, then it has to be less than 20 feet or less.
Uh-huh.
So you're kind of incorporating both of them, but getting away from having to have a permit. Because this permit process seems like it could really overwhelm the system, at least initially. Maybe not if we grandfather everybody in.
It's completely true.
Well, it'll be in the paper, and then everybody's going to see it and go, oh my gosh, I'm in violation. Because there's, 80% of the people follow the rules, and then they're going to see the new set of the rules, and they're going to come in and file their, we'll just have to expect it. It's just, unless you see a better way.
You make a good point, Mark. We're trying to put some suggestion for direction, and we're not going to get it.
Well, we'll take a stab at some modified permit process, but we have to have two tough things are, what are the criteria or the things that you look at in making a determination, and who's going to hear it? And I want to go back to administration and talk about it. I was pleased to hear somebody suggested city council. So
that was me. What about BZA as a...
possible
body.
Possible. I'll go take a look at our modified code and see if that would address it. See, these are. Yeah, I'll take a look at that.
Jim, I still have, and everyone here, I still have a problem with corner lots because of the nature of the beast.
Mm-hmm.
They're right out there for the whole neighborhood to see.
Well, again, this provision is they've got to be 60 foot back from the building line, and they've got to be screened. And they've got to be in the rear yard.
And not visible from the street.
Unless you require total enclosures, we're not going to address specifically how they take care of the view from the backyard. And what about the guy that gets up and looks out his bedroom window and sees it down in the other? We can go to a lot of extremes on this.
What do you think should be? What do you think would solve the corner lot problem?
Won't be allowed on corner lots with a permit.
In response to a plan.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
And that eliminates somebody just taking and going down to Home Depot and buying 10 bags of river stone, throwing it on top of the grass, parking their RV in the middle of the backyard for everyone to see.
With the plastic palm tree.
I think we've given Jim some good discussion and a direct, right? And maybe the one piece that we need to work out is whether we put a size limitation or not. But I think for a side yard, a field process makes a lot of sense. And maybe for a space limit. But all we can do is get down to one point that we have to discuss, which is size or no size. Permanent or no permanent.
Yeah. Those are the two.
But that's progress, if we can agree on all the other points. So I don't know. I guess, John, I suggest that we send him back and come back to the school. Most everything baked in except that one.
Okay, let's look at the June 13th memo, the one that we had today, okay? And let's just go through these one by one and make sure we're... Okay, so our thought is, item one, we're in agreement with...
I'd like to add, I think Sandy makes... I'll tweak the language to sort of go on addition of what good repair, meaning... unmaintained and unusable. I'll figure out something to keep that.
Do you want to add that separately?
I'll work it in as shall be kept in good repair, maintained, and usable. Take out the uns.
Yeah, it's always good.
Good repair, comma, maintained, and usable.
Okay, so Jim, you're under.
Yeah, I got that.
Okay. Number two. Okay, we're good on that. No recreational vehicle can park stored on property unless it's titled to or leased or used exclusively by one or more of the permanent occupants of the residence where the vehicle's used. We're good on that. Three, I think we're good on this one. Only one shall be parked in the rear yard. With the 72-hour loading and unloading exemption. I think we were in agreement, we're in rear yards now. 5 feet, I think we're in agreement, that's item four. Item five is existing, and we're in agreement with that. Number six, we're agree with that. Seven, I think we're in agreement on that. Eight, I think we're in agreement on that now. Nine, should be visible from an adjoining street. Screening is accomplished. Now, are we, we're generally good with that, right?
Yeah, are we saying then that we're backing away from any reference to adjacent homeowners, homes?
I think that's one of the points that's still on the table. That was to describe screening from additional neighbors, one in backyard.
Could we take out adjoining visible from any street?
Okay, but that's not,
not,
the point, not the point I'm making. My point is, what about a person behind you?
Or to the side of her.
To the side of her.
Well, that's screening the whole thing then.
Right, that's...
I can't think of, I can't, with one, well, it's because I didn't see him. With one exception where I was looking for it, this one on Maple, okay? I can't think of another recreational vehicle that I've seen in town that can't be seen from someplace.
Yeah.
That's because you can't see them.
So, let's ask...
No, but I'm talking thousand, I'm talking about a thousand, thousand vehicles that you can see from someplace.
Okay, so just as we, in our society, put organized criminals away, not for what they did, but for tax evasion. Can we assume that if RV is in compliance with every piece of this code, that probably they will be acceptable to an adjoining neighbor? Is that the way to think about it?
Not every adjoining neighbor, I guarantee you.
Well, all right.
What about the hideaway case?
Well, I know, that's a good question. How would
the hideaway case, you're talking about the... This is, you're talking about the RV that was falling apart?
In the back, in the lady's backyard. It's a deep backyard.
Yep.
It really is a side yard.
Yeah.
And
well, that wasn't on, that wasn't unpaved.
Just green.
It wasn't unpaved, and it wasn't in good repair.
Yeah, that's my point. I mean,
yeah.
if we have to comply on every one of these other points, will it become acceptable to the neighbors who adjoin it? That I don't know. We've got to come up.
The answer is no. The answer to that is no. There will be some people
they'll never accept it.
Who will never be, who are never going to be happy
from somebody's backyard.
One of the,
from that guy's back.
Yeah, one of the things I want to think about inserting in number nine, and I see, I'm more of a proponent from the street view than from every angle, but if we add more, that's council's decision. I think I want to put in some type of test of reasonable screening. If there's an absolute ban of visibility, sufficiently screened or reasonably screened. I can just see, even if we screened all the way around a motor vehicle or a vehicle, you go up into the you go up and look out the back, you know, out your bedroom window, and you're going to see it because you're looking down on it. So there's got to be some
one
word.
One of the proposals, you know, that one of the I can't remember the guy's name. You know, it needs to be inside. You're going to have a recreational vehicle, it has to be in a garage.
Yeah.
Or in a structure.
And that's where we're headed towards if we, the more we want to screen from every potential angle. But I think I want to put in the word reasonable.
Well,
screening.
Kevin won't like reasonable at all.
He might like it. He might like it better than having it screened and somebody say, I can see through those bushes. It's going to be a tough one, but we'll work it out.
Well, okay, and maybe we just need to concede that, that we can't do that, you know, from a property sightline standpoint. but maybe Jim, if you can give it some.
We'll kick it around a little bit more.
I guess as you're, if you're scoring at home, Dad, we're saying the commodity is a little bit more work.
So can we put, so it's not visible from any street? I mean, that addresses the hideaway thing a little bit, because there were pictures from the street too. It was a big, I mean, there were pictures from all angles that, you know, said, look, you can see this from.
Yeah, but that wasn't really the point. His point was so you could see it from the deck.
I wonder that, does that do anything for the corner lot?
Number 10, if we tweak that a little bit, it'll solve the hideaway problem. By permit only would solve that problem.
And then going back to our enforcement discussion.
What would your permit be that would prohibit that RV being there? Would you require a higher standard of a?
No, you require all these things to take place.
Well, hold on, I got another way to address this. What if we left 10 like it is? Okay. And added the old from the May 29th proposal. Number eight, storage of vehicles 20 feet or less, limited to rear yard, limited 20 feet or less, because it's already limited to rear yard, and then added another section creating a permit process.
Yeah, I like that a lot.
That's what we started with.
Yeah.
Okay. 20 feet.
Doug, you're a master. We come right back to the same, the 20-foot limits
right
back
in
and the permits back in.
Yeah.
And before long, we're going to have CRAs through the whole city. You are a master. You are a master. I'm sorry.
Relentless. Okay. As my daughter Kim says, you'll just keep talking until we give in.
You did a good job of that last night.
Yeah,
I did. All right, 12, permit. All right, I'm gonna, okay, circulate something.
So do we like that then?
Yeah, what's the answer? I think I've said that once. I want to see what that language would look like. I'm still very confused on that.
Well, what that has to do to be acceptable to all of us is who's the permitting process? Who's the group that's gonna make a judgment about the permit? How long is it gonna be for? I mean, those are specifics that where they're going to like or not like
it. You know, I'm looking at these BZA variances, and I know we don't do a lot of them, apparently. But if the standards were right, that would seem to be a perfect place for it. That's what the BZA was created for.
I think clearly the service department did not want to be the ones to have to enforce or grant permits.
Yeah, so I think that's right.
If a third party was responsible for that with appropriate guidelines, that solves at least one of the issues. I still have a favor of city council, but that's...
Well, we could do that.
I don't think you hear anybody here saying
yeah.
You don't want to step up or some...
If that's the only thing that works, then that's what works.
You know, you could... Any permit request would be referred to the Zoning and Annexation Committee for their recommendation to full council.
That's fine.
Something like that, maybe.
Question about the permit. So the neighbors move in, so then they come and they get a permit,
right.
And then the neighbor's complaint
right.
is invalid.
If the permit's granted, then as long as it's within the parameters of the permit, it's permitted. And if there's a time period on it, there's a time period on it.
So if you're proactive, you get the permit ahead of time.
Right.
Maybe some people will be, probably most not.
Most would be reactive.
If the complaints come in,
when the zoning guy knocks on the door and say you're not in compliance, they'll run and make an application for a permit. That's how it would work.
Okay. Does that answer the neighbor's complaint, I guess, is what I'm saying. The neighbor still complained about the
situation. Depends what the guidelines you're going to have to work through on the permit, which would be, frankly, a case-by-case analysis of what you would want to permit. In some cases, screening is required. Sometimes it might not be.
It will make the neighbor happy. Now you just said, I have another set of issues. You still have one person happy, one person. Exactly.
Yeah, but think about how the permitting process works. I assume, I've not spent a lot of time with the Planning Commission, but my understanding is what the Planning Commission does is they say, okay, we see your application. We like it in general, but you've got to do this and this to get our approval. And so, you know, somebody comes in based on a complaint, and the neighbor comes in for an application, and we say, okay, we see what you're doing. We think it's generally okay, but to satisfy us and satisfy your neighbors, you have to do this and this. I mean, that's how a permitting process works well, right? Planning Commission works well that way. So that, to me, seems like a logical, commonsensical way to approach this. The only thing that I don't see here, Jim, and Doug, is the grandfather piece. If somebody does, is found to be in violation, how long do we give them to make amends? And I think we just, I'd like to see it only be a function of that, not a function of everybody having to change partners, you know?
It's hard to codify or put it in writing what that, you know, there's certain basic precepts of law that, you know, retroactive application of a statute is not enforceable. That's grandfathering. Trying to put or tweak it, I'd almost rather see if the city's administration can appropriately decide how to handle these things.
Without putting it in the code. And I like that exercise of enforcement discretion, which you do very well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, there's, so to that extent, I think that grandfathering is there. You know, it's in our case law, common law, it's there. But whether or not, you know, how long, you know, the question comes as well, when he takes it out and brings it back, is that does the grandfathering go away? I mean, leave us with some discretion to work on that. Because we don't really, you know, a lot of these, you know, ones, more than half of these, most of these are not people getting complaints from, so.
Okay. One final piece on number 11, remove section 112107E. What is that?
I forget, but it we're going to make some changes. We can pull it.
I think it's the...
Oh, you got it. I looked at when we did it and said, yeah, that makes sense. It's probably the one that has another.
1121.
Assuming this is up to date.
0.07.
07 DE. E.
It's the accessory.
5 feet. See, well, that's the one that, that's the 48 hour one. That's the section that deals with 48 hours.
Right.
So goes to 72. You're going to.
Right. So do we have a direction?
Well, I'm working on that. Yeah, I think we're pretty close.
What are we going to recommend on number 10?
Well, I think we're going to work some more on this. I think
you can leave it the way it is if you're going to allow an appellate process for side yards. I thought I heard someone say corner lots. I mean, if you're going to allow an appellate process.
I said that corner lots would only be acceptable unless they went through the permit process because of the nature of a corner lot. You know, originally my thinking was just to ban them completely on corner lots, but I like the permit process. I think it gives us some flexibility. But I think corner lots, the nature of the beast, is that they're visible from the whole neighborhood. So you have to, you know, you asked a question about how would you handle it. I think it would be handled on a one case-by-case basis.
That's the only way you can handle that. That's, I'm not on the zoning committee, but that's my suggestion as a council member, that we take a look at corner lots as a special case. And I like the permit process because it eliminates the permanent ban.
Going back to number nine, when you say adjoining street, on a corner lot, are you talking about both streets?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's going to be hard to get one if you, except by the appellate process, if you want to allow the appellate process to cover it. We only were really talking about side yards on that one. I don't know in a particular circumstance whether a corner lot would have a side yard or not. Probably would.
Well, not in the case of Carol coming to us with the Brandy Lane examples of houses in the subdivision there.
Right.
Corner lots don't really have side yards. That's the problem today. Now, arguably, that might be in subdivisions that are, that don't permit storage anyway, but I'm not sure if that's absolutely true.
We will make a stab at coming back with a refining, you know, incorporation of the things that I've heard you think you're at. Come back with another stab at some type of permitting process, and let you take another look at that. Try to have that at least as a council item for referral back for folks. Then I'll get it back here.
Okay, and I'll get with the law director to talk about this administrative enforcement issue, and we'll talk about that soon. Because I can't believe I can't find it in the friggin' code. All right, do we have anything else, or entertain a motion to adjourn? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
We stand adjourned at 9.